Hello and welcome to Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo. I'm Ryan Bickle. In the next half hour, we're talking with Kevin Dries about saving animals outside their natural habitat, or what they say, ex situ conservation. But first, Jessie Lowry's here, and she's going to talk a little bit about what we do here at Blank Park Zoo.
Thanks, Ryan. I'm Jessie Lowry, the conservation manager here at Blank Park Zoo. And really, this whole series is about how we use the zoo as a tool to help save animals, endangered animals, and imperiled habitats around the world. We've got an audience of almost 500,000 people, and we want to leverage that to help save endangered species. And we do that really in a multitude of ways. We've got some local projects, like Plant Grow Fly, a local pollinator conservation project where we encourage people to plant butterfly gardens. We've got our Upcycle program, which we remove invasive plant species from local parks, which is another way to restore the habitat. We, of course, support through financial means as well as in-kind support to field projects around the world in the range country of many of the animals that we have here at the zoo. And that's a huge component of what a zoo can do to save animals in the wild. We send our staff to the field, which we've talked about on this program before. And really what we see the zoo as is a window to the wild, a place where we can invite the community, schools, families to come and get a glimpse of the beauty of what nature has to offer. But our job is, as a zoo, is to turn that sense of awe that we all get when we see these beautiful animals inside of the zoo into a real conservation action, something that will actually make a difference to animal populations around the world, a behavior change. And so that's a responsibility that we really take seriously. And so what we're going to talk about today is yet another way that Blank Park Zoo, with the support of the community, can do to help save animals. And that's called ex situ conservation. And that is conservation of animals outside their natural habitat, like you said, Ryan, and more specifically, the captive management and breeding of endangered animals. And we've got the Director of Animal Care, Conservation and Research, Kevin Dries, here today to talk about that very subject.
Hi, Kevin. How's it going?
Hey, it's going good. Thanks for asking me to talk about the topic.
So tell us a little bit about, I know there's some terms maybe we should get out on the table first. We're going to hear the word SSP a lot, and that stands for Species Survival Program. Why don't you just take us through what a Species Survival Program is and how that plays into it?
Okay, that sounds fine. Yeah, like you said, SSP, that is thrown around pretty easily. So a species survival plan is really a system of managing a captive population of animals. And basically, that SSP then is the foundation for this in the zoo cooperative captive management of any given species. And I know we oftentimes talk about the endangered species that are part of an SSP, but also a lot of species are, whether they're endangered in the wild or not, because it's really the zoo being responsible and managing its animals the best it can, even if the expectation is not that the animals will someday be released in the wild.
And so why don't you talk a little bit about the goals of SSP programs? You mentioned one was perhaps releasing animals to the wild. Talk to us a little bit about the goals of the program broadly.
Okay, well, sometimes I explain it. It may be more familiar with someone who said, let's like breeding purebred dogs. You're going to know the fathers or the sires or the mothers or the dams, and you're going to know this ancestry. And the SSP program leader, the person responsible, or sometimes it's a committee for some species, but based upon the genetic background of the animal, they're going to make choices over which animals should reproduce with which to keep the most genetic variability in the captive population. Because obviously the main goal is when you have a captive population of animals, that you want to manage them responsibly, meaning you're going to avoid inbreeding for the main purpose and for the longest period in time. Because generally, inbreeding is considered not a good thing. You end up with high mortality rates and health issues with the group. So we're managing against that, and basically, the SSP. Will help institutions that are part of the Association of Zoos and Aquariums receive and also send out the surplus animals. And so the SSP also acts as sort of that in-between person to help make recommendations about where animals go.
So as I understand it, zoos do not necessarily buy and sell animals that when animals are part of an SSP.
That's true. That is part of the evolution of a modern zoo and part of the zoo ethics in that probably now the first SSP really only got its start in about the 1980s. And kind of the idea is that zoos do not want to be consumers of wildlife. They don't want to take animals from the wild. They want to manage the animals that are already in captivity to meet the needs of members of the Association of Zoos and Aquariums. I should say that the SSP really is a program for institutions that belong to the Association of Zoos and Aquariums. And we can have non-AZA participating partners for some species, but for the most part, this program is for the 230-some zoos that are active members of the AZA.
And why don't you tell us a little bit, give us a little bit more background on AZA and what it means to be a member.
Okay. The Association of Zoos and Aquariums broke off from a parks management association probably about 50 years ago, and their goal was to continually improve all aspects of a modern zoo. And so not only how they care for their animals, but also safety features, physical facility expectations, the educational component that that an institution presents to its audience, as well as the recreational activities there and the visitor services at the institution. So, and accreditation, it's a voluntary. You choose to belong, and you undergo an accreditation process where you fill out an extensive application, and actually a visiting committee comes to your institution and looks at the physical aspects of the zoo, but the protocols of how animals are cared for, that safety drills are occurring, and they sort of look at all that kinds of things, and they will point out the things that the institution does well, and they will point out the things that could be improved. And it is a continual improvement process, so there's always something more that an institution can do. And that needs to happen every 5 years, and you have to meet those expectations in order to be accredited and be a part of this SSP or this breeding program that we're talking about.
And Blank Park Zoo has been accredited since the 80s, correct?
That's right. The history of the Blank Park Zoo opened in the 60s, but it closed in 1982 due to disrepair. And when it reopened in 1986, they did a name change and recognized the Blank family that gave the startup money and the property where the zoo sits and renamed it Blank Park Zoo. And it, at that time, joined the AZA for the first time, and it has been continually accredited since 1986.
Let's talk about the nuts and bolts of an SSP. And there's also something called a stud book coordinator, and mm-hmm. you manage a stud book for a couple of species. Talk about that.
Okay. Yeah, it's so if you're going to manage, so the species survival plan has two components to it that the program leader is responsible for. There is the stud book, which is really the data and how the individuals in that captive population are related, and that stud book is the basis of being able to make those recommendations on what animals breed with which. But basically, there's four things as a program leader that you're going to be managing for. The first we already talked about, which was avoid inbreeding. And the second one that sometimes takes a little bit of an explanation, it's called equal founder representation. And for a captive population of wild animals, a founder is, if you think about the Mayflower and the people that came over, the first people that started the new country, they were founders. And so in this case, an animal that is actually taken from the wild, comes from the wild into the captive population, is a founder. And so through the stud book, you have all the records of, you know, sires and dams, and you go back until eventually you would get to an animal that was taken to the wild, because we're talking about wild species. And in your stud book, if we talked about one of the species that I managed, the Bennett's wallaby, which we have second largest group in the United States at the Blank Park Zoo, but theoretically, we go back and we maybe have, we can trace back to 20 individuals that were taken from the wild. And so when I say equal founder representation, if you look at the descendants from those original 20 taken from the wild, if you want to capture all the genetic diversity of the captive population, you'll kind of want the same number of descendants from each of those 20. So if it was skewed, it would be like if one of those was highly prolific, had lots of offspring, today it might be overrepresented in the captive population. Maybe they have 100 living descendants, where another founder only has 2 living descendants. Well, as a program manager, you're going to try to get, though, that smaller represented group to breed more. And ideally, if you had 20 founders, you'd have, each one would have 20, you know, the same number of living descendants. The other thing that you look for when you're managing an SSP is simple demography, which means the ages of your animals. You can't have all your animals the same ages, because they will all go out of reproductive age at the same time, and you don't want that. So you're going to want to stagger your age groups so that you have the best chance of making this sustainable. And the first SSPs were kind of based on this idea that if you manage them correctly in captivity, you could retain your genetic variability for 100 years. And, of course, that's the assumption that their native habitat will be ready for them to come back in 100 years, which, you know, we're not on that track. And so the SSPs are going to have to evolve as they go. And so the fourth thing, besides avoid inbreeding, equal founder representation, and demography, is simply what I call carrying capacity or holding space. We say there's 231 zoos in the AZA, and for Bennett's wallaby, there's about 50 that actually exhibit and have space for the Bennett's wallaby. And if you add it up, you know, 8 at this zoo, 6 at this zoo, 4 at this zoo, you come to a number. And for the Bennett's wallaby, it happens to be about 300. And so you can't just say reproduce, 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 because you only have room for 300. So what are your choices? If you overstep that number, that probably means that animals are going to get dispositioned to some place outside of the AZA, and then we're not sure how they're going to be cared for there, or else they're going to be crowded at an AZA zoo, and you don't want that, because that's lowered animal welfare. So basically, you have this cap on the number of animals. And so those four things, you're making your choices of who breeds with who, and also what years animals are reproduced.
That's really interesting, Kevin, how that all works out to make sure, like you said, that we are breeding these animals for a sustainable captive population, ensuring their welfare. And I just want to take a step back and look at the broad picture once again. When we're talking about species survival plans and this ex situ conservation within accredited zoos like Blank Park Zoo, you know, it's really for a couple different reasons. It's to hedge against extinction, and for, again, like you said, to make a sustainable, genetically robust captive populations in human care within AZA accredited zoos. But also for the goal to be released back into the wild. And like you said, some of the habitats and imperiled biological hotspots around the world, unfortunately, are not ready to receive these animals back into the wild again. But hopefully that's the road that we can take. And there's a lot of examples out there within the zoo community of zoos saving animals from extinction through captive breeding. A really famous example is golden line tamarins, California condors, black-footed ferrets, and many, many other examples of zoos who saved animals from extinction through captive breeding. And so our most famous example here at zoo is probably Tumani, our eastern black rhino. And there's only 800 eastern black rhinos left. That's in human care and wild populations combined. And Tumani will likely never go back into the wild because of the poaching crisis that's happening right now in Africa and Asia. And we've talked about in previous programs that rhinos are poached for their horns. And so we want to make sure that Tumani is healthy and genetically robust, and she will likely go to another AZA facility and make more eastern black rhinos to make sure that we have this hedging against extinction. And so I think it's really important for us to think about the big picture and why we take such great care to make sure that we have healthy individuals in AZA institutions. Let's talk about some of the examples of SSP programs and SSP animals that we have here at Blank Park Zoo.
Okay. Yes. So altogether, you know, there are, I think there's about 7,000 different species of animals kept in AZA institutions. And there isn't an SSP for every one of those. You know, they have to be prioritized. And the people that do operate those SSPs are people who work in the zoo field on a voluntary basis. They will, you know, take the time to keep those records up. Basically, you're in touch with each institution to get that information and so that you can make wise choices. But here at the Blank Park Zoo, we participate in almost 37 different SSPs, I believe. Not everyone. You don't necessarily have to be a breeding institution to participate in SSP. You know, we're talking about we want to give all the animals good animal welfare. And so sometimes that means holding bachelor groups of animals for the benefit of the overall captive population. But sometimes we are breeding institutions. And, of course, that's what people like to see is baby animals. And some good examples this year, besides Tumani, is our common eland. And our attics are all, and our Japanese snow macaques are all SSP managed species, and we are breeding institutions for those, just like the Bennett's wallaby. And, you know, that's what the visitor sees is the great thing about being able to see babies of these different species. But I guess the important thing that we would like to share today is that a lot more goes in to the captive cooperative management of these species than just having babies. And probably when I first got in the zoo field, I thought if you have an endangered species of animal, you're going to breed it all the time because it's endangered because there aren't enough. But then when you hear about the carrying capacity and that sort of thing, the wise use, oftentimes we talk about birth control and limiting births just as much as we talk about trying to have births. And so sometimes at first glance, some people are wondering, why wouldn't you be, you know, reproducing ring-tailed lemurs if they're endangered in the wild? And in reality, could be a couple of reasons. One is we might be at the carrying capacity for all the zoos. Another one might be that that whole equal founder thing is that they might come from a really successful founder, and so their reproduction is being slowed so that a less well-represented line has the opportunity to breed.
Kevin, can you talk a little bit about when SSP leaders and coordinators identify a couple animals that would be potentially great mates, how that process happens and how animals are moved between zoos and you know, what happens if it's not a successful matching?
Okay. Yes. So it usually works out, like Ryan said earlier, about animals really aren't bought and sold anymore. And basically the idea is that if you take the dollar value off of an animal, that people won't breed for to try to have financial resources for their institution, that they will breed and also not breed when it's best for the captive population of animals. And so when you're a member of AZA and you participate in the SSP, normally you're not buying those animals. If we use the case of the rhinos or lions or tigers, if you as an institution have the facilities and the qualified staff to care for them, you can participate and usually you don't have to pay for the animal. Now, however, just to move some of these exotic animals around can be expensive. You know, the transportation costs for big cats and whatnot. So there's still a cost to get the animal to your zoo, but it isn't, you're not buying the animal like you might livestock or something like that. Basically, when an institution is collection planning, is what they call it, like what species they're going to add to their collection and what role they're going to play in the overall mission of the institution. Once a species is identified, usually you that your zoo wants to acquire, you'll contact the program leader of that SSP and say, we're going to have this exhibit coming online in a year or whenever the estimated date is, and what kind of, you know, are there going to be animals available for us? If we use, again, the case of the black rhinos for the zoo, which the zoo, Blank Park, and I doubt any zoo in the history of Iowa has had eastern black rhinos before, but we started planning for that about 3 years before the rhinos actually came to the zoo. And the program leader had identified Ayana at Zoo Miami and Keanu at Great Plains Zoo as a good genetic match, meaning that they weren't that related to each other and that would be a good for the captive population if they would reproduce. They were weaned and separated from their mothers about 2 years old. That's when our facility was being finished and they were transferred to the zoo. And how do you move a rhino? Well, there are companies that are in the business of moving exotic animals. And in this case, rhinos are, through their husbandry training program, the animals get used to and voluntarily go into the crate. And so usually the zookeepers work on that for a few months before the rhino is actually asked to go in the crate and the door shut. And basically then that crate is loaded onto a trailer and it goes down the interstate. And probably if you were traveling, you wouldn't even recognize a trailer as carrying such special cargo. Basically, they're sort of nondescript and would probably look similar to the kinds of trailers that move racehorses around, kind of large, nondescript ones. They don't necessarily want to attract attention, and they also want to get from point A to point B as quick as they can, so they don't, you know, spend a lot of time stopping. When they have such precious cargo as that, usually the rider will have the video camera in the trailer so he can monitor how the animal's doing. And then along the route, they will have contacted other zoos that they're going to be traveling by in case there was ever any kind of an issue that they needed some support, why they would already have a contact at the closest AZA institution to kind of to offer some support.
So if you're just joining us, we're talking with Kevin Dries about SSPs, which stands for Species Survival Plans. Kevin, sometimes this means that we have to say goodbye to animals, and in a year or so, we'll have to say goodbye to Tumani. And talk a little bit about that and why.
Yep. There's, you know, depending on the species, but if we talk specifically about Tumani, while in the wild, rhinos, you know, the adult males and females live separately for the most of the time, except during, you know, breeding times. And basically they can give birth about every 2.5 years, 3 years. And so a calf will usually stay with its mother for about 2 years, and then there's a natural split off. And actually the zookeepers here at Blank Park, part of their role is to make that transition for the animal leaving as stress-free as they can. And so already Tumani is having some time away from his mother so that he can start getting used to being separate. And that will continue on for months, because then during those separate times, while he's already has begun his husbandry training program, they will be getting him used to the area where the crate will be for him to load. And like Jesse said, the ultimate goal will be for Tumani to be paired up with a rhino at another institution. And now they don't reach sexual maturity for 4 or 5 years, but this sort of division at 2 years of age is kind of the natural behavior for the rhino. And then we feel that that's the least stressful on the animal, to kind of follow those patterns that the species you know, follows in the wild.
Let's talk about a couple other of our charismatic species that we have here at the zoo, the other SSP animals, and maybe some of their stories about the pairings that we've had. I know we've had different pairings of lions and, of course, our tigers. We've had success with giraffe reproduction. What are some of those personal stories that you want to share with us?
Okay. Well, what's this summer, what's actually occurring at the zoo is the introduction of our male Deuce, the two female lions that transferred here from the Santa Barbara Zoo. And kind of that long-range plan for our lions was that we had elderly lions that were post-reproductive, and we were giving them the best geriatric care that we could in the last stages of their life. And we were just really waiting for them to really pass on. And so we had Deuce. He was brought as a young cat here when our older male passed away. And then we received the recommendation from the program leader to bring these two sister lions in to be paired up with Deuce. And when new animals come to the zoo, in order to be as safe as we can about that, we have a quarantine facility where all new animals come and live for at least 30 days, sometimes longer. And when the veterinarians can do tests and determine that they're healthy and that they can enter into the main zoo population. And so the two female lions were up in quarantine for about a month, and then they transferred to our lion, our big cat holding area. And first they got to be introduced to Deuce just via smells and sounds, and they had their own stalls. And when things seemed to be going okay, then we have what we call a howdy door. Basically, it is a mesh door so the animals can see each other but not really have access to each other. And that occurred for about 2 weeks, and then the zookeepers allowed one of the lions that actually is going to be the future breeding lion here at the zoo, allowed her to develop a relationship with Deuce, and we are currently in that process. And sometimes for lions, this introduction part is loud, and sometimes a little scary. For lions, you know, they're just loud, strong animals, and this introductory period is their chance to sort of determine how they're going to live together as a pride. And I'm happy to report it's going really well, but it has been a few month long process.
I think the story about SSPs and Blank Park Zoo's animals is just a wonderful example of accredited zoos working together to help maintain this sustainable population, to educate and inspire our 180 million visitors per year to care about these beautiful animals and to hedge against extinction and help maintain these populations for future generations and hopefully to be released back into the wild. So thank you so much, Kevin, for being here today and telling us a little bit about your experiences with SSP and how Blank Park Zoo has really been a big part of that.
Yeah, thanks, Kevin.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us today. Blank Park Zoo is open year-round, and you can visit us any day of the week during the summer. You can learn all about the zoo, such as the animals, special events, and previous episodes of this show, and more at blankparkzoo.com. Make sure you check out the zoo's YouTube channel, where there's lots of fun video. You can see baby Tumani, the baby rhino, and Deuce, the male lion. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Please make sure and join us again for Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo.